This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Donald Trump sent out a tweet Tuesday night that all is well after Iran fired more than a dozen ballistic missiles at two Iraqi air bases that houses U.S. troops. U.S. authorities are now checking for casualties and damages. VOA senior White House correspondent Steve Herman is following the developments.
What we know is that the Iranians targeted two U.S. bases with a number of missiles. All indications are that there were no casualties, no Iraqis at those bases in Iraq, or Americans have been killed or wounded, according to the latest information. But officials at the White House and Defense Department are cautioning that until it's daylight and they make a thorough assessment, we won't have a full indication of the extent of damage. There is some speculation that the Iranians wanted to send a message of retaliation, but not cause an escalation that would have compelled the President of the United States to attack Iran as he has threatened.
President Trump says he will make a statement on Wednesday morning. Meantime, Iran's foreign minister said Iran does not want escalation or war. Iranian state media reported Tuesday a stampede at the funeral of Qasem Soleimani killed at least 32 people and injured 190 others. Tens of thousands of people gathered to honor Soleimani at his hometown of Kerman before his burial, following similar ceremonies this week in Tehran and other cities. State media reported said the burial was postponed following that stampede. For more news, please join us at voanews.com. From here in Washington, this is VOA News. Iranian state media reported Wednesday a Ukrainian passenger plane carrying 180 people crashed shortly after taking off from an airport in Tehran. There was no immediate word on injuries. The report said the suspected cause of the crash was mechanical. South Korean President Moon Jae-in said Tuesday there is desperate need for practical ways to improve ties with North Korea, adding that he was ready to meet with the reclusive leader in Pyongyang repeatedly if necessary. We get more on the story from Michelle Hennessy.
Moon Jae-in used the annual address to say there's a, quote, desperate need for improving ties with North Korea, and said he regrets the lack of progress in negotiations.
In a time of deadlock in U.S.-North Korea talks, and where we're even concerned about a step backward in inter-Korean relations, we're in desperate need of practical ways to improve cooperation between the Koreas.
Moon added that he was ready to travel to Pyongyang again and repeatedly meet with reclusive leader Kim Jong-un if necessary. Over the new year, Kim promised a new weapon was coming in the face of, quote, gangster-like pressure from the United States. But he signaled there was still room for dialogue with the U.S., something Moon said on Tuesday must continue, adding provocations and threats are not helpful for anyone.
That was Michelle Hennessy reporting. The United Nations reports intercommunal violence in Sudan's West Darfur state has killed and injured scores of people and forced tens of thousands to flee their homes. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Fighting erupted between Arabs and the Mazalit, an African indigenous ethnic group, at the end of December in and around West Darfur's capital, El Geneina. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs says the violence has taken a heavy toll. It reports at least 54 people have been killed and 60 injured. It says 40,000 have been internally displaced and thousands of others have fled to Chad in search of refuge. OCHA spokesman Jens Laerke says the displaced are sheltering in schools and government buildings around El Geneina. He says UN agencies and local partners are providing essential relief. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Firefighters in Australia are taking advantage of the weather change to shore up defenses against the massive bushfires. Rain and cooler temperatures giving firefighters time to bolster containment lines, clear ground vegetation, and conduct controlled burns. But the rainfall is not enough to extinguish hundreds of fires still burning across the area. For details on more news, please join us at voanews.com or the VOA mobile app. From here in Washington, I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barte in Washington. Today's Wednesday, January 8th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. General Khalifa Haftar's forces have captured the Libyan city of Sirte.
Amateur video showed forces loyal to General Khalifa Haftar inspecting captured military vehicles in the coastal city of Sirte Tuesday after taking the city from militia forces.
That's VOA's Edward Uranian in Cairo, Egypt. In South Sudan, there are mixed reviews about transitional accomplishments halfway through a 100-day delay. A court has ordered the Liberian government to restore a license of a radio station. Guinea-Bissau awaits a court ruling on election challenge. And separatists say they will soon declare a lockdown in Anglophone Cameroon ahead of February 9th legislative elections.
Let them bring in 100,000 of troops into Ambazonia. Their organized elections will not take place in Ambazonia.
Chris Anu is the spokesperson for the self-declared Ambazonian Republic of Cameroon, and a new research shows the vital link between indigenous people and the conservation of forest landscapes. Those stories, plus a special Wednesday sports edition, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Forces loyal to Eastern Libyan military commander General Khalifa Haftar have captured the coastal port city of Sirte, hometown of former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. This followed a raid on the city on Monday. The advance of Haftar's forces comes amid talk of a Turkish military intervention. Edward Uranian reports from Cairo.
Amateur video showed forces loyal to General Khalifa Haftar inspecting captured military vehicles in the coastal city of Sirte Tuesday after taking the city from militia forces loyal to the rival government of internationally recognized Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj in Tripoli Monday. Haftar's military spokesman, Colonel Ahmed al-Masmari, told journalists that the capture of Sirte took just 3 hours. Operations Chief Khalid Mahjoub told Arab media that a multi-pronged attack encircled the city quickly. He says that frogmen took the port of Sirte, then moved in to capture the main military base inside the city called Camp Saadi. General Haftar's men then completed the rout of their opponents when they moved into the airport and militia forces surrendered. Libyan media also showed video of Haftar's men in the town of Abu Ghraib, west of Sirte, Tuesday, inspecting militia tanks they had captured. It was not immediately clear how close Haftar's men are to the militia stronghold of Misrata, but Al Arabiya TV reported that Haftar's fighter jets bombed positions held by militia fighters along the coastal highway leading to the city. Saudi-owned Ashark al-Awsat newspaper reported Tuesday that newly elected Algerian President Abdelmajid Tebboune told visiting Tripoli-based Libyan Prime Minister Fayez al-Sarraj that Algeria opposes any outside intervention in Libya, but is ready to play a role in mediating an end to the conflict. Arab media also reported Tuesday that Tunisia and Saudi Arabia expressed opposition to a possible Turkish military intervention in Libya. Egypt is due to host a meeting of foreign ministers of several North African and European countries Wednesday to discuss the Libyan conflict. UN Special Envoy Ghassan Salami told journalists Monday that the situation in Libya is bleak and that he opposes foreign intervention in the country.
And what I ask these countries is very clear. Keep out of Libya. There is enough weapons in Libya. They don't need extra weapons. There are enough mercenaries in Libya. So stop sending mercenaries, as is the case right now.
A map circulating on social media showed Haftar's forces control most of Libya, with the exception of a band of coastal territory between Misrata and the capital, Tripoli. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
Cameroon separatists say they will declare soon a complete lockdown throughout Anglophone regions to prevent the Cameroon government from conducting scheduled February 9th legislative and municipal elections. Spokesperson Chris Anu says there will be no movement in and out of English-speaking regions during the controversial elections. He urged residents to begin stocking up on food, water, and medicine ahead of what he calls a no-mercy lockdown. Cameroon military launched attacks this week in Anglophone regions ahead of the election. The main opposition leader, Maurice Kamto, has said his party will boycott the elections. Chris Anu says the separatists are also determined to prevent the elections from taking place.
We are a separate people, a separate country from French Cameroon. And let them bring in hundreds of thousands of troops into Ambazonia. Their organized elections will not take place in Ambazonia. They can bring in their soldiers. They will not bundle people to polling stations. We are decimating every polling station that we find in Ambazonia. And any election official who dares into our territory does so at his or her own risk. We have made it very clear we did not participate in their last presidential elections, and this one will not be any different, irrespective of how many soldiers they bring into the country.
The Minister for Territorial Affairs has warned the opposition political parties against boycotting the elections. Can this election take place if, say, the opposition, particularly from Anglophone Cameroon, does not take part in it?
Well, you know, a fraudulent system, a fraudulent country, a fraudulent government, when ministers of their government begin to force elections upon people or force people into the polls, a political party, that of Maurice Kamto, has already said they are boycotting the elections. Other political parties, if they choose not to participate or if individuals choose not to participate, why do they have to force them? Again, they have the right to do what they want to do, but not to force people and not to conduct elections in the territory that is called Ambazonia. That will not happen. It will happen at the shedding of blood. That is how far we are prepared to go. We shall be declaring a complete lockdown of the Ambazonian territory very, very soon. There shall be no movement out, no movement into Ambazonia within the period of this their election. That is to tell you how serious we are, because we no longer take instructions from French Cameroon.
How soon before this lockdown?
It will be pretty soon, and we are asking people to stock food, stock water, stock drinks, stock medications, because it will be a no-mercy lockdown as the last one.
Did the military offensive in preparation for this election take you by surprise?
No, absolutely not. We have never taken them any day at their word. They say one thing and they do the other. So you would imagine that just before Christmas, Paul Bia asked that their troops be withdrawn from Ambazonia into the barracks. But then they didn't take out anyone. They pushed in thousands of troops. They just doubled down on the troops in our communities. As we speak, 15 trucks load of soldiers were sent into the northern zone, Bamenda, yesterday. 350 were sent to Boya. Some are being sent to other places called Buri, the BLM, Batibo, and other communities. And they want the people to believe they are looking for a solution to this crisis. Well, if they are looking for a solution to this conflict, let them collaborate with the Swiss Dialogue Initiative.
Chris Anu is the Secretary of State for Communication of the self-proclaimed interim government of Ambazonia. He was speaking with us from the U.S. city of Houston. Today is Wednesday, January 8th, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Still to come, a special Wednesday's post edition. Daybreak Africa time, 14 minutes past the hour. More than half of the extended 100-day pre-transitional period is gone, and parties to the peace agreement have mixed views about what has been achieved so far. A government spokesperson says outstanding issues on security arrangements have been implemented, but an opposition spokesperson says the parties are far behind schedule on the big issues. Mayang David Mayar reports from Juba.
South Sudan's information minister and government spokesperson Michael McQuay says in the past, parties have made progress in implementing pre-transitional activities.
As a government, we are making progress, and I'm sure the revitalized agreement will be implemented, and the RTBONO will be established towards the end of the 100 days. All the security arrangements are now underway. People are moving to the training centers. Those who are going to be trained are not recruits. They are not civilians. They are already military people. So all that they need is a refresher course, which can take 2 or 3 weeks, and they are graduated and deployed.
But SPLM-IO deputy spokesperson Manawe Peter Gatkwo says the parties are far behind schedule on a number of issues that were supposed to have been completed by the end of the first 50 days of the extended pre-transitional period.
The security arrangement, we start late. We're taking the first containment area to training sites. We are facing some challenges also, number of sources from side of the government, since they are not attending the training site, which area is controlled by IO, the forces of the government. Up to now, they didn't reach. The issues of number of states and the boundaries should be addressed before evaluation of the 50 days, because it's a part of the activities of 50 days.
Manawe says recent fighting between SPLM-IO forces and a group allied to the government in Joko in former Upper Nile State violates the ceasefire and is likely to affect the implementation of security arrangements. The National Democratic Movement, led by Dr. Lama Kol, which is a member of the South Sudan Opposition Alliance, issued a statement at the end of the first 50 days expressing concern about deadlines not met. The statement seen by VOA says the government announced the release of $40 million in the fulfillment of $100 million pledge it made, while the real amount availed was only $16 million, less than half of that figure announced. It also says the government has shown no compromise on the stalemate over the number of states. McQuay says President Salva Kiir and SPLM-IO leader Riek Machar will resume talks on the number of states this week to resolve the matter.
Number of states and allocation of ministerial portfolios, allocation of the states and so forth will be agreed upon within the next few days. Riek Machar has not come back, and we are still waiting for him. We are expecting him to come at any time.
The Troika, which includes the United States, United Kingdom and Norway, released a joint statement last week at the end of the first 50 days, calling on the government to fund the peace process transparently. It also encourages all signatories to the peace deal to demonstrate measurable progress on the issues of states and boundaries and on the implementation of pre-transitional security arrangements. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Guinea-Bissau's presidential elections were supposed to usher in a new era for the country after years of political crisis, but Domingo Simoes Pereira, who the election commission said lost to Umaro Sissoco Embalo in the December 29th polls, is challenging the official numbers. Pereira and his African parties for the Independence of Guinea and Cape Verde, the PAIGC, have appealed to the Supreme Court alleging fraud. Amadou Jemanka, executive secretary for the Guinea-Bissau Observatory of Democracy and Governance, tells Ricky Schreier he expects the appeal to lose and that this will only hinder PAIGC's ability to work with Embalo in the future.
They say that there is nothing, there is anything that can put in jeopardy that the result already put it for the public that give Umaro Sissoco Embalo the victor. So deadlines and the rules of complaint are clear in the electoral law. So this challenge will not help at all. That is, the Supreme Court will only confirm the decision of the National Commission of Election. That is, Umaro Sissoco Embalo is the winner and Domingo Simoes Pereira is a loser.
How long does the Supreme Court have to rule, or is there a deadline?
By the urgency of this process that every one of us is so curious, so the Supreme Court will pronounce by the end of the next week. So everything gonna be clarified, and I have no doubt that the position will remain the same that the National Commission of Election already said, that there's nothing that can change the result already pronounce it.
Do you think this challenge by PAIGC to the results will have an effect on the ability for Imbalo and the PAIGC to work together in the future?
I think with this situation, PAIGC is already shooting itself and disturbing all the chance that they could have to work with Imbalo, who in several times put himself available and open to work with everyone, because being president, it's something meaning that you have to include everyone to develop the country. And being PAIGC, the party with the majority in the parliament, not absolute majority, but relative majority, he always said that he will nominate Domingos Simões Pereira as prime minister. But now with all this situation, I don't think that that would be possible.
That was Amadou Jamaica, executive secretary for the Guinea-Bissau Observatory of Democracy and Governance. He was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Guinea-Bissau's capital, Bissau. A civil law court in Liberia ruled Tuesday that the operating license of Punch FM TV be restored. The government of Liberia in 2018 revoked the station's operating license on grounds that the license was acquired fraudulently. The station is owned by journalist Patrick Hannon, a strong critic of President George Weah's government. As Moses Gazier will report from Monrovia, government lawyers have filed an appeal to the Liberian Supreme Court.
After a series of complaints to different human rights groups and diplomatic missions about being denied the rights to operate a media house, journalist Patrick Horner sought the wisdom of the court as a final resort. He filed 13 counts against the Ministry of Information for withholding his legally acquired registration and frequency papers, among which he argues prevented him from opening his radio and TV station. However, the government argued that Horner's license was acquired fraudulently, but his verdict on Tuesday, civil law court judge Peter Benuwali said the court took into consideration 6 of the 13 counts and concluded that Mr. Horner acquired his document legally. As such, the judge said the station rights to operate be restored.
The petitioner later obtained its article incorporation on January 5, 2018, and its respondent granted a permit to the petitioner on January 10, 2018. This court perceives no deception and misrepresentation on the facts and circumstances in this case, and that the permit granted the petitioner on January 10, 2018 is valid. And in view of the foregoing, it is the ruling of this honorable court that the petitioner's petition for declaratory judgment is hereby granted and the resistance thereto is denied. The petitioner is entitled to its permit as a matter of law.
Soon after the judge's ruling, government lawyers led by Councillor Wise A. Wise announced an appeal to the Supreme Court of Liberia. In June 2018, the government began a revision of all media operational licenses and authorization. Mr. Horner's Punch FM license was revoked on grounds that the station did not meet the authorization standards. Horner said this following Judge Peter Benuwali's ruling on Tuesday.
This has been long since coming. We all know that it was just as a result of personal vendetta, anger, and marginalization that led us to where we are today. Those are the vestiges of the past. Those vestiges of the past were resurrecting. We'd like to thank the court for such a ruling.
For the last 2 years, human rights activists have criticized the government's decision to deny Punch FM and TV station the right to operate. Mr. Horner had argued that he was singled out because he had been critical of President Weah during the 2017 elections. The court ruling came a day after anti-government protesters demanded the government restore the station's permit to operate. Media activists called the lower court's ruling as a victory for press freedom and called on the Liberian Supreme Court to issue its opinion on the case as soon as possible. Moses Gazel, VOA News, Monrovia.
It is time now for a special Wednesday edition of Daybreak Africa Sports. And here is Samson O'Malley in Abuja, Nigeria. A very good Wednesday morning to you, Samson.
Good morning. Good Wednesday morning to you, James, and welcome to our special highlights of the 2019 CAF Awards. Tanzanian bongo flavor recording artist Diamond Platnumz thrilling audience to some of his favorite hits in an entertaining night at the CAF Awards Gala in the Egyptian Red Sea city of Hurghada. The first award of the night went to Yusuf Bilali, the talented Algerian forward who plays for Al Hilal, who was named the African Interclubs Player of the Year. Then followed 21-year-old Morocco right-back Achraf Hakimi, who plays for Borussia Dortmund on loan from Real Madrid, who won the award for the Youth Player of the Year award. Then the other awards began to follow one after the other.
Now it's time to know who's the African Women's National Team of the Year.
And the best African Women National Team of the Year 2019 is Cameroon.
Goal of the Year 2019, Riyad Mahrez.
It's time now to announce the African Coach of the Year Women.
For 2019 is Desiree Ellis.
The African Federation of the Year 2019, and the winner is Egyptian Football Association, Mabrouk.
African Women's Player of the Year 2019, Asisat Oshoala.
Then came the moment everyone was waiting for, and the honors was for the CAF president, Ahmed Ahmed, to perform.
African Player of the Year 2019, Sadio Mane.
The 27-year-old Senegalese striker was up against his Liverpool teammate, Mohamed Salah, the Egyptian who won the awards the last 2 years, and Algerian Riyad Mahrez of Manchester City. Sadio Mane enjoyed a stunning year with Liverpool, winning the Champions League, UEFA Super Cup and FIFA Club World Cup, as well as missing out on the Premier League title by just a single point. He also finished joint second in the AFCON top scorers list, though Senegal were beaten in the final by Algeria. Highlight of the evening was the special award given to Kojovi Obilali, a former Togo goalkeeper who was injured in a terrorist attack on the team's bus in 2010. Three people died, but Obilali survived after bullets damaged his spine, abdomen, intestine, liver and bladder, but has overcome all those challenges to contribute his quota to the growth of football. And that's it on Daybreak Africa Sport. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. We look forward to your report again on Thursday. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Forces loyal to Eastern Libyan military commander General Khalifa Haftar have captured the coastal port city of Sirte, hometown of former Libyan leader Muammar Gaddafi. This followed a raid on the city on Monday. The advance of Haftar's forces comes amid talk of a Turkish military intervention. Cameroon separatists say they will declare soon a complete lockdown throughout Anglophone regions to prevent the Cameroon government from conducting scheduled February 9th legislative and municipal elections. Spokesperson Chris Anu says there will be no movement in and out of English-speaking regions during the controversial elections. He urged residents to begin stocking up on food, water, and medicine ahead of what he calls a no-mercy lockdown. Cameroon military launched attacks this week in Anglophone regions ahead of the election. Main opposition leader Maurice Kamto has said his party will boycott the elections. And that is it for this Wednesday, January 8th edition of Daybreak Africa. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Cloyte and Ricky Stryak, as well as sports editor Samson Omale, along with all of our engineers, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing you a very good day.
The 62nd Annual Grammy Awards Show is coming up. To celebrate, Border Crossings will play songs from the winners of the 2019 American Music Awards to refresh you on some of last year's best tracks. Tune in to hear from your favorite artists like Post Malone, BTS, and Taylor Swift, January 23rd on The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.